When it comes to the question of how you and I can lose weight, the answer is always sold as something brilliantly simple. We just eat less calories, we eat beautiful food, and we just move a bit more, and everything will be brilliant. So why are we so bad at this? We spend billions of dollars globally every year on diets that work sometimes, and then months later we've gone and put it all back on again. It's quite dispiriting. What makes it even more galling is that some people seem to be able to eat whatever they want and not gain a kilo, while others can gain weight by simply looking sideways at a muffin. That also adds to what's maddening and confusing. So, are we thinking about dieting in the wrong way? Dr. Giles Yeo is a geneticist at Cambridge University in the UK. He spent the last 20 years trying to understand the obesity epidemic. And Dr. Giles Yeo is also a presenter with the BBC. His new book is called Gene Eating, The Science of Obesity and the Truth About Diets. And with him is my other guest. She's on Skype from Slovenia. Dr. Priya Samithran is an endocrinologist specialising in obesity management. Giles and Priya, welcome to Life Matters. Giles, I might start with you if I may. What is wrong with how we've viewed weight loss so far?
Well, I think you're right in a sense, or everybody is right in a sense, where weight loss is a question of eating less and moving more because it's physics. Okay, so we definitely have to do that. The mistake I think that we have been making is that there is going to be one size fits all way of eating less and moving more. Whereas what we're beginning to realize from biological and genetic studies is where the variation lies, why all of us are different, is not the physics, but in leading up to the physics. So why do people behave differently around food? And on the other side, why do people appear to be more efficient or appear to store more calories rather than burn them, or burn more calories rather than store them? So the question is not how we gain weight and lose weight, but why do some people behave differently around food? And I think that's where we get it wrong.
Priya, as an endocrinologist, you see patients every week who are dealing often with quite chronic weight issues. Have our misconceptions as a society about weight gain affected why they have so much weight that you're now helping them with?
I would say that the misconceptions about weight gain have affected them more in a way that's related to stigma. So as a society, we're very judgmental about weight and we attach a moral value to it. So people assume that people who are lean are very virtuous, and people who have excess weight, it's all just due to a laziness and lack of self-control. So it originates because we still think that we know the answer, that all people need to do is to eat a bit less and exercise a bit more. And so if that's not working for you, then you're doing it wrong or you're not trying hard enough.
Yeah.
And we don't understand how complex it is and why there's so much variation between people and how it's much more difficult for some people than others. Every week, patients tell me really shocking stories about the abuse that they've been subjected to and the discrimination that they face. And it's so deeply ingrained that they really often hold these negative views even towards themselves. So I've heard Giles say, and I've thought it myself before, that really as a society, we've made a lot of progress towards it being unacceptable to discriminate against people based on various things, race and sex and religion, sexual orientation. But weight is still an area where we seem to lack an understanding about this.
Well, just explain from your perspective as an endocrinologist, what's going on inside our bodies that mean that behaviours around dieting can come up with very different results or even the same behaviour?
Our body is designed to protect us from losing weight so that we can survive periods of famine, we can reproduce. Both of these things require us to store fat adequately. And it's only really recently in our history as a species that we've been in a situation where there's an excess of food around. So our body is really remarkably good at protecting us from losing weight, much more so than from gaining fat. So what happens is that there's an area in our brain which controls a lot of our appetite and how we burn energy, and this receives information from around the body from various hormones. For example, leptin, which is a hormone from fat, sends information to the brain about how much energy we have stored as fat. There are a number of different hormones from the gut which are released or suppressed when we eat, which let the brain know what nutrients are coming in. And the brain takes all this information into account and then makes adjustments in how hungry we are, how full we are, how interested we are in food, what sort of foods we find rewarding, the amount of energy we burn. It does all this to try and help us maintain our fat stores and in particular to prevent them from being depleted. So what happens is that when we start losing weight, even if we're overweight, those hormones change. So the signal from leptin plummets, which indicates to our brain that our fat stores are getting smaller. There are changes in lots of the hormones that are coming from the gut and pancreas, which are sending messages to the brain that we're losing weight, which historically would have indicated that there was a shortage of food and a threat to our survival. So the brain then responds by doing what it can to limit this potential risk and help us keep the fat stores up. So it does this by making us hungrier. We're more interested in food. We conserve energy. We reduce the amount of energy we burn doing various activities. We store fat more efficiently. None of these things are within our conscious control. And we would be really thankful for this if we were genuinely faced by a severe shortage of food, because it would allow us to survive that. But what it means is that for people who are intentionally trying to lose weight and to keep it off in an environment where there's plenty of food, then it really makes it very difficult to keep off in the long term, because these changes aren't just temporary during the period of dieting. Research has shown us that some of them can last for many years. So most people who will lose weight and then stop dieting will put the weight back on in the longer term. And this isn't just because they got lazy and went back to old habits, but there's a biological process that's actively encouraging the weight to be regained.
That's all very depressing, I have to say, Priya. Dr. Giles, Dr. Giles Yeo, can I come to you on this? Overlaid on what Priya's just said, do individuals also have different genetic predispositions to retaining weight or losing weight?
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, as Priya says, we all have a very universal way to respond to lack of food, and that is to eat. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been here to survive. But all of us behave differently to too much food, because there never was an evolutionary pressure to, you know, for us to all behave universally when there is too much food. And so all of us are going to behave differently in the current food environment, having too much food, not moving enough kind of environment. All of us are going to respond differently. And therefore, we have inter-individual variations. So we now know of over 200 different genes that play a role on how we behave around food and our body weight, for example. And so some of these genes make our brain less sensitive to the signals coming from our fat, from leptin, for example. And some of them make our brain slightly less sensitive to the signals coming from our gut and our stomach. But imagine if you've eaten 1,000 calories and your gut and stomach signal to your brain that you've eaten 1,000 calories, but your brain is sensing only 900 calories rather than the full 1,000. Well, it's going to drive you to eat more to make up the extra 100 calories it thinks is missing, for example.
But why is my brain, Giles, miscalculating in the first place?
Oh, that's because different variations of genes that are going to be there make your brain just slightly less sensitive. You have to remember that this was never perceived as a negative thing when there was not enough food, because all of this would have been variations that would have been advantageous, perhaps, which is why they would have been there. Or there are going to be other variations that just didn't have an effect when there was not enough food. And so these changes just accumulated until the environment changed, until what we're living in today, and then suddenly they have become harmful.
If you just joined us, my guests are Dr. Giles Yeo, who's a geneticist at Cambridge University in the UK. He spent the last 20 years trying to understand the obesity epidemic. He's a presenter with the BBC, and his latest book is called Gene Eating. That's G-E-N-E, Eating, The Science of Obesity and the Truth About Diets. And with me as well is Dr. Priya Samithran, who is an endocrinologist specialising in obesity management and a senior research fellow at the University of Melbourne. And we're actually dealing with the conundrums, the dilemmas around trying to not only lose weight in an increasingly fatter society, but also to keep that weight off. If you've struggled with your weight, how do you manage it? What has worked for you? We'd like to hear from you right now. You can let us know on our Facebook page. Priya, can I come back to you on this? You've laid out, both of you and Giles, a fairly bleak view of what is under our control and what's not, due to the survival mechanisms that are deeply held within our primal brain. How then can we move forward in a way that doesn't cause us that cyclical pattern of behaviour, which is so endemic, it seems, particularly in Western dieting, where you may lose a few kilos for a short amount of time and then often regain it and sometimes even put more on?
I think it's important to understand that this is the situation, so that a lot of this is not within our control, that it's very common to lose weight with a diet, stop dieting, and put the weight back on. That's how our body is designed to function. So you could take the view that that's depressing, but actually I think it's important to just be informed about that as a situation, which will then allow you to have the best chance of success when you approach it. So what we need to understand is that this is not a short-term undertaking. For people who are motivated to lose weight to reduce their risk of health problems related to the excess weight, it needs to be thought of as a long-term thing rather than just a diet, because you need to have a long-term strategy in place to change your behaviours with regard to eating habits and exercise, and do that really for the foreseeable future.
So diet, in fact, is a terrible word to use, because it almost is implicitly aiming to define itself as short-term, even though the short-term may be a few months. What we're talking about here, Priya, is lifestyle change that is ongoing and permanent. Depending on who you are, it is catered for you.
I mean,
yes,
diet.
Exactly.
Sorry, Giles, what was that?
Sorry to interrupt there. It's just that diet, it's an interesting thing. Diet comes from the Greek word dieta, which actually means a way of life. So the actual word, root of the word diet, means a way of life. It's just that we have taken the word diet and turned it into this toxic fear of food word that we're actually living. And I think if we actually take diet for what it means changing our way of life. And right. You know, what a beautiful word that is.
Thank you for bringing it back to its original roots there, Giles. On this very matter of paving a way forward so people do sense that there's hope for real weight change and also improvement in their quality of life, aren't you empowering GPs with a certain tool that helps them with their patients?
Yes, actually, with my colleagues at the Obesity Management Clinic at Austin Health, where I work, we developed an online course which covers some scientific background and practical clinical information aimed, it's primarily at GPs, but any health practitioners who are involved in assessing and treating people with obesity. So the reason we developed it is because this science of body weight is fairly new. So when I went to medical school, for example, we didn't learn anything about it because there was very little known. So there are a lot of doctors who aren't necessarily comfortable or familiar with what they can do to help their patients with their weight. And we use a fairly intensive program in our clinic at the hospital. And we have a lot of GPs and other doctors from around Australia and, in fact, from overseas that want to come and sit in with us and learn about it. So we wanted to make it accessible to health professionals on a larger scale and demystify the process, because there are a lot of people, a lot of patients who are asking for help, and the more clinicians that feel confident to provide that help, the better.
Dr. Giles Zhou, not only are you a geneticist, but like a method actor, you are a method researcher. You've tried a lot of the diets I think you now poo-poo. You've gone through a whole bunch of them that are currently very popular indeed. I'm thinking here about the paleo diet. And have you tried intermittent fasting?
I have tried intermittent fasting, actually. I've just come off a few weeks ago. So for this program, Trust Me, I'm a Doctor. And I went on an intermittent fasting diet, and this will come out in a new series. And I hated it. I hated it because I ended up, so I did a 5-2 version of it. So
yes.
I did
Which is the one that one of your colleagues on BBC, Dr. Michael Moseley, has proselytized so quickly and effectively in his book and in the series.
That's exactly right. But I, to be fair, I hated it. And I hated it because on the days which I was only eating my 600 calories, I just was thinking about food the entire time. And then I then spent the other 5 days dreading the 2 days that I was only going to have my 600 calories. Now, this is not to say that thousands of people don't actually find it very useful. It's just that for me, as a strategy for losing weight, it wasn't particularly pleasant. And I only lost over 4 weeks. I lost like a kilo and a half. So I think there are better ways for me personally for losing weight. And I think that's probably the message to put out there, that you got to find something that suits you, suits your lifestyle, because it's got to be a lifestyle change in order for you to actually find it successful to actually lose weight. And the other important thing is, obviously, is that it's not easy, and losing weight will never be easy. And so that is also going to have to be part of the tools that you actually try and use, and the strategy that you put together.
And in so doing, this strategy that you alluded to, and I think Priya and you are almost on the same page with this, is that the strategy is now for the rest of your life, because your brain otherwise is constantly trying to help you survive by pushing you through hormones and maybe genetics back to eating what you really don't need anymore in a first world diet.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We put a lot of onus on the personal, meaning that we have to change our lifestyle, and that, you know, to some element, I understand why. But one of the big things which we also have to do is to actually consider our environment. Now, you say, well, we can't change our environment. Well, you know, we can't clearly on a macro scale as one person, but you can control the environment to some degree within your house. And so I think that's the other thing we have to think about. So if you're going to think about losing weight, you might want to actually be honest with yourself about how you behave around food. You know, do you turn to food when you become stressed, for example? Or do you stop eating when you become stressed? That's a very interesting thing, right? It's exactly the same hormone, cortisol, yet people behave in diametrically opposite reasons. And why is that? Probably down to your genes. Do you like a sweet food? Do you like fatty food? And actually put this down. And once you actually know, honestly, how you actually behave around food, you can at least put a strategy in your own household for how you actually respond to those foods. Now,
which is exactly why Giles, you're not allowed to have pork scratchings in your house, from what I understand.
That's exactly right, because I love pork scratchings, fried pig skin. Who doesn't like fried pig skin?
Oh, I can think of a few people, vegans among them. Priya, can I come to you now? As someone who's working in the area as an endocrinologist, would you be adding any more to Giles' advice on this? Should we be customizing a diet that suits us on a long-term basis that we can then use and employ? Or is there other moves and strategies you'd like to recommend?
I completely agree with Giles, but I think that in addition, there are other strategies that we could also consider, which might involve using, for example, medications to help control our hunger a bit better and help us stick to the eating pattern that we are trying to do.
Oh, does that mean we have to be even more medicated than we are now?
It's not for everybody, and I definitely wouldn't recommend it for everybody, but I think that there are some people who, when they lose weight, they really, really, really struggle with sticking to the eating pattern because of hunger. And I think that for some people, medications definitely have a place to try and help them manage that.
And exercise? What role does exercise play? Because I've heard it's 80-20 in terms of diet and exercise for weight change.
It shifts as depending on what phase you're at. So I think when you're at the phase where you're actually trying to lose the weight and get it off, it's very hard to do that if you don't change your diet. So the diet is much more important at that stage. But when you're in your longer term phase of trying to keep the weight off and maintain those habits, then exercise is very important. It's really hard to keep your weight off in the long term if you're unable to exercise at all. The people who are most successful at keeping off large weight losses in the long term have very consistent habits in terms of high level exercise every day, very consistent eating habits, and keep attention to both of those things in the long term.
Well, on that cheery bombshell, I might say goodbye to both of you. I think there is some hope there for the future, but it takes dedication. Clearly, that's a very strong message from both of you. And don't think that one size fits all, because clearly it doesn't. We need to customize according to what is going to be a permanent and lasting way of changing our lifestyle so we feel comfortable with who we are as we lose weight. I'd like to thank Dr. Giles Yeo, who's a geneticist at Cambridge University. He's author of a new book, Gene Eating, The Science of Obesity and the Truth About Diets. And Dr. Priya Sumithran is an endocrinologist specializing in obesity management and a senior research fellow in the Centre for Research and Education in Diabetes and Obesity at the University of Melbourne. Priya, Giles, it's been great. Thank you very much. This is Life Matters.